Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
You would think there would be a lot of rat poison potentially in play for Georgia here this weekend, going to Jordan-Hare Stadium as the number one team in the country. When the playoff rankings come out again tonight, my expectation is that Georgia's going to remain at number one there. Dogs have clinched the East. Earliest that's been done in years and years. Guaranteed a spot in Atlanta for the SEC championship game. And, oh yeah, by the way, the rivalry team that Georgia's playing on Saturday is a team that the Dogs have beaten every year going back to 2013. That was the last Auburn victory in this series, and I guess the overall numbers are, what, 10 of the last 12 have been won by Georgia against Auburn. A lot of good news for the Dogs here. A lot of, as I said, sort of rat poison potentially in the game against the Tigers on Saturday. But, of course, Kirby Smart's going to do everything he can to kind of push back against that message, including the issue of the rivalry here. And I thought that Kirby was asked a pretty interesting question in the press conference when he met with the media yesterday. You know, this is a very different rivalry than the one that Georgia just had with Florida, the Gator-Hater rivalry that we talk about so much. One of the reasons why we emphasize that here on Dog Nation Daily is because for most of the last few years, Georgia hasn't had enough success against Florida, and Kirby downplayed that before the game. But the opposite is true of Auburn, where Georgia's had more success than maybe some outside onlookers might would have expected Georgia to have against Auburn. But as you would probably expect from Kirby Smart, no matter what the track record of the rivalries has been, mostly bad against Florida, mostly good against Auburn, Kirby's message remains the same, that the past and these kinds of things just doesn't matter very much. Here's how he explained that yesterday.
I think our message has always been the past doesn't affect the present, and that message is still true. What would any game in the past against Auburn have anything to do with this game? I don't know that it does, because I don't think their team is anything like it was the last 3 years, and I don't think our team is anything like it was. So past doesn't affect the present. The present will affect the present, and what we do in the present matters a lot.
So in a weird way, here's what the good news is, I guess, if this is good news, that Kirby Smart, what he's trying to say there, that message may be received a little easier by his team, given what some other people are saying about the Georgia-Auburn game on Saturday. Georgia undefeated, ranked number one. Auburn's lost twice. Georgia's won several in a row in this series. Auburn's trying to change that on Saturday. Despite all of that, it is not universally agreed upon that Georgia's supposed to be the point spread favorite here and supposed to win this game when it's played at 3:30 Eastern time on Saturday. And as an example of that, someone making the message for Kirby Smart a little easier, his name is Doug Kazarian. I hope I'm pronouncing that name correctly, Kazarian. He's sort of a gambling expert, and he appeared this week on SportsCenter, and he was asked a question. Hey, are there any sort of weird point spread situations out there in college football right now? Any kind of interesting things to look at? And what Doug points out is the disagreement that seems to exist between Georgia and Auburn and which of these two teams is the better team and more likely to win the game on Saturday. Here's how Doug Kazarian explained that on SportsCenter this week.
There seems to be a divide amongst odds makers about who should be favored, Georgia at Auburn.
Yeah.
Last week, as we know, we've talked about in the past, Westgate does look-ahead lines or games of the year. Auburn was a 2.5-point favorite a week ago. Both take care of business this past weekend, but the Wynn Hotel opened up Georgia as a 2.5-point favorite. I talked to the head odds maker at the Westgate. He still thinks Auburn should be favored by about a field goal, so it's surprising that Georgia is now favored on the road this weekend at Auburn. So, I mean, 2.5 to 2.5, not a huge difference, but there seems to be a divide right now amongst odds makers about who should be favored.
And I cannot stress this enough. This, that message there, not that the players themselves are sort of paying attention to the gambling market, but the factors that influence the gambling market, I think the Georgia players can't help but notice. The fact that there is this legitimate belief that Auburn's pretty good and a team that's capable of beating Georgia on Saturday. It's probably important to also note here, this is not Chauncey Gardner shooting off his mouth before the Florida game with very little evidence to back up his point, or Chris LeMond from South Carolina last week doing the same thing, or Jonathan Abram from Mississippi State doing that the week before Georgia played Mississippi State. This isn't sort of unfounded trash talk. This is sort of legitimate analysis from people, bettors in this case, who have to put their money where their mouth is, and they actually take money out of their wallet if they're wrong. So you have some legitimate voices here saying, you know what, Auburn's pretty good, and maybe Auburn may be the team that sort of upends Georgia's undefeated season on Saturday. Now, that remains to be seen if it's true, but what's pretty obviously true right now is this is the kind of thing that Kirby Smart can use this week to keep the Georgia team focused on the task at hand as it goes to Jordan-Hare Stadium. And for what it's worth, at least to a certain extent, Kirby, I would think, agrees with some of the assessments that are out there about Auburn, because when he spoke to the media yesterday, you get the impression that Kirby also thinks the Tigers are pretty good.
Very physical up front, offensive line, defensive line. They got a back that's playing at a really high level. They've got a quarterback who's got an extremely strong arm and does a tremendous job throwing the ball vertical down the field. And I think Kevin's done a really good job defensively. I think the numbers show that. They're really physical up front. They do a great job. They've always been good on special teams under Gus, and they've got a good all-around football team. And obviously the environment to play over there, I've been there a lot throughout my coaching career. They get it loud in there. And they do a really good job creating the environment, and they feed off that. So the challenges are in front of us. We're going to find out a lot about this team playing on the road. It's a tough place to play against a really good football team.
Kirby mentions Jordan-Hare Stadium there, and obviously for those of you that pay attention to the point spread stuff, that's the reason why some people think Auburn ought to be the point spread favorite over Georgia, going back to what the guy said on SportsCenter a moment ago, because of the fact the game is played there on the plains at Jordan-Hare Stadium. Obviously the game is in Athens or even a neutral site. I think there's a lot of reasons to believe that Georgia would be the point spread favorite in all of those scenarios, but playing the game at Auburn makes it tough. And listen, I've been to Jordan-Hare Stadium a few times, looking forward to being back there again on Saturday, and I can tell you, as Kirby Smart talked about, it is the kind of environment that can challenge teams, maybe even Georgia on Saturday. And Kirby went into a little more detail about just what's so tough about playing at Auburn.
Well, it's the same challenge as it is at most SEC places. It's just a little bit louder. And they got a good team. I mean, the better the team is, the tougher the place to play is. And their fans get loud, get rowdy. They're there pregame to the end, and there have been some really loud moments playing in that stadium, and I don't expect it to be any different Saturday.
Extra intense maybe even for the rivalry game this weekend. And, of course, you know, speaking of it being a rivalry game, I was kind of having some fun with Auburn on Twitter last night and the 11 sacks they allowed in a loss at Clemson a little earlier this year. Now, when Kirby Smart spoke to the media yesterday, for people like me who kind of bring that up and like rubbing that in Auburn's face from time to time, Kirby, I think, would caution all of us not to read too much into just that one game for some reasons that he thinks are obvious. Here's a little more from Kirby.
Well, I think there's a little misnomer there with that, because when you watch that game, they're not the same team now that they were then. They're not the same offensive line now that they were then. Clemson certainly has some really elite rushers, and they got after them. It was also their quarterback's first time playing at Auburn in a big game in a situation like that. So I don't really go much off that, and Clemson has their personnel, and they play the way they play, and we have our personnel, and we play the way we play, and they're not always the same. So Clemson did a tremendous job getting pressure. We need to get pressure. We need to affect the quarterback, but you also have to cover the guys that they have out there running the routes, and they've got some really fast guys out there running those routes. So big thing is stopping the run and not giving up big plays.
So listen, here's the bottom line for me on this entire discussion. Auburn this weekend has some legitimate believers. Some of them are the betting public out in Las Vegas. Some of them are the folks that just talk on TV about this stuff for a living. Auburn was ranked 14th in the college football playoff poll last week. Tonight, when the rankings are announced again, my guess is they're going to be much higher than that. Solidly in the top 10, and some people are going to be saying that Auburn, even as a two-loss team, is still a team that has a chance of being in the college football playoff. They have some believers in that regard. And conversely, Georgia has some legitimate doubters going into this game. You're going to hear some people saying that Auburn's going to be the team that upends Georgia's undefeated season. And as we said before, and as many of you already know, this is probably exactly how Kirby Smart wants it. He doesn't want to talk about having won the East. He doesn't want to talk about having, you know, the number one ranking attached to Georgia's name. He doesn't want any of that kind of stuff. Whether it be rat poison or not, he just doesn't want to talk about it. He wants to focus on this game. The national conversation around the Georgia-Auburn game on Saturday, I believe, is going to make that a lot easier for Georgia to do. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Thanks so much for being with us. We're on Facebook Live at 10 a.m. each and every Monday through Friday. You can watch us on video there. On the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and in podcast form pretty much any day of the any time of the day, any moment in the night, anytime you want to listen to a Dog Nation Daily as a podcast, it's right there for you on demand. We post the show on the worldfamousdognation.com. It's there for you on iTunes, SoundCloud. We try to make the podcast as convenient for you to find as possible. And want to remind you that we're going to be out and about this Thursday. Jeff's been telling me going to be at the Marlows in Roswell for our Dog Nation big game preview, talking a lot more about the Georgia-Auburn game there. Would love to have you come by and join us 6 to 8 p.m. That's this Thursday. That's November the 9th. Marlows in Roswell, 625 West Crossville Road. If you're watching some video, you can see the address on your screen. If you're listening, I'll say it one more time, 625 West Crossville Road. That's 6 to 8 p.m. this Thursday, Marlows and Roswell, for our Dog Nation big game preview. Jeff and I looking ahead to the Auburn game, looking kind of at the state of UGA recruiting. Jeff gets very, very candid in sort of these off-air conversations. So if you want the real skinny from Jeff on UGA recruiting, come out and see us this Thursday at the Marlows in Roswell. And by the way, many of you know that yesterday I made a big announcement that if you're watching a video, you can see me wearing my Own the East t-shirt. Obviously, why would I not be, given the fact that Georgia went out and accomplished that goal on Saturday. And we want to give these away to you, at least one per day here for the next few weeks. I told you the way to do it is, I'm going to tweet out a link to our video show before 10 a.m. each every morning. You can retweet that. Or when I post the podcast, I'll tweet out the link to the audio version of the show. That'll come sometime after, you know, 11:30 or maybe the 12 o'clock hour here on the Eastern time zone. You can retweet that. Retweet that from my account at Dog Nation Daily. And I'm going to pick one winner per day, one retweeter per day to be our winner. And we're going to give away an Own the East t-shirt, one per day, kind of while supplies last here for the next couple of weeks. So we drew a name from our retweets from yesterday. And I hope I pronounced this correctly. Katie McKeo. Hope I pronounced that correctly. Katie McKeo is the winner of our Own the East t-shirt for yesterday. We'll give another one away today. So if you see that tweet from me at Dog Nation Daily, I posted it before 10 a.m. this morning, or the tweet I'll post, you know, around the noon hour East Coast time when I post the audio version of the show, please just retweet that. We'll collect all those names. We'll draw out a winner, and someone is going to get an Own the East t-shirt. And Katie will be in touch with you about how we can deliver one of these Own the East t-shirts to you. And thanks so much for sharing Dog Nation Daily, and thanks so much for being a part of our program. And to all of you, thanks for being excited about the fact that UGA owns the East here this season. I think that's something worth celebrating. Of course, Kirby Smart, as we've talked about before, does feel a little bit different about that. You know, people like me get hysterical and happy, and you know, we have a good time and sort of turn this into one long week-long party when all this good news is happening for the Georgia program. Kirby Smart, on the other hand, is still grinding and still going to work every day and blocking guys like me out, making sure that I don't become a distraction to the team and to the players. And he talked yesterday, I thought this was actually kind of a really interesting thing for him to say, about exactly how he continues, even this late in the season, to try to deliver that message, how the team in general tries to keep focused on the task at hand. And I thought he got very descriptive here about exactly what it is they're trying to do to make sure everybody stays on the same page with the place that Georgia is still trying to go. Here's a little more from Kirby Smart.
I think the messaging that we create and pass down through the staff and through the leaders in the group is talking to them so that they relay the message to the rest of the team has been the best, most effective way to get the point across, is to have those guys do it and not us do it ourselves. And when they do it, they take ownership in it. And we've had them write some things down, and then we pass that out and let the players see it, because it's easier to write it down sometimes than to say it for a kid that's not used to getting up in front of the team. But we've tried different tactics just to stay focused. Ultimately, it boils down to preparation week by week, and we'll continue to do that this week.
What I find to be interesting about what Kirby Smart says there is just how important he views sort of staying focused, almost at the expense of anything else. Because you might think going into a big rivalry game like this, that the key to victory was getting fired up and being intense and being, you know, extra aggressive. But Kirby Smart sort of views it more as a cerebral exercise. And it's something that's sort of best taught by players as opposed to coaches. And he said things like that already this season. But it's kind of funny how, for him, that message doesn't waver at all, even after this week of tremendous accomplishments, being number one, winning the division, and looking ahead to a rivalry game that every Georgia player wants to win. Now, speaking of winning that division, we kind of gave you some audio yesterday of what Kirby Smart said about that on Saturday, and apparently yesterday, even at the sort of lunchtime there in the Athens, Georgia campus, Kirby still had not talked to the team about their spot in Atlanta for the SEC championship. Here's a little more from him explaining why.
Well, I really haven't gotten together as a team since Saturday. So, you know, all that broke out afterwards, and we've got team meetings and things today, but that's not been a major concern for us. Our concern has always been on the next opponent, and that's really where we are kind of now.
Yeah, listen, so, I mean, that's obviously been par for the course for Georgia thus far this season. And I think one of the things that has made Georgia fans so proud of this Georgia team this year is just how well they've done at embodying the idea that Kirby Smart presents week after week, that it is about staying focused, and it is about chopping wood, and it is about blocking out media distractions from blowhards like me. And Georgia's been great at that all season long, and my guess is they'll continue to be very good at that as the season continues. It's great to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to talk to Jeff Sintel about a lot of big UGA recruiting news, including a wish list for one big-name UGA commit, but who he'd like to see join him in the class of 2018. We'll do that. I'll also explain later on in the show why maybe the University of Georgia owes an apology to some of its all-time great players, at least in recent history. We'll do all of that coming up. Great to have you in the program today, and as we promised, here comes Jeff Sintel right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And before I say good morning to Jeff Sintel, let me quickly remind you that Dog Nation Daily brought to you in part today by our friends at Georgia United Credit Union and their all-new Unified Checking Account, which gives you all the comforts of a free checking account with the options of earning more. It's a simple, convenient, rewarding checking account that fits your lifestyle. Visit GUCU.org for the terms and conditions that apply to this account, federally insured by NCUA. Good morning, Mr. Sintel. How you doing today?
Good morning, Mr. Blowhard, Brandon Adams. I mean, what are you doing crucifying yourself on your hair, man? That's crazy.
Listen, you know I'm the enemy to Kirby Smart when it comes to this kind of stuff. I'm the guy that's always hyping everything up. I'm the guy who's always, you know, wanting to talk about owning the East and beating up on the Gators. And, you know, I'm the exact opposite of Kirby wants to say focus on the task at hand. I'm probably always sneaking ahead to the end of the book. You know that's not what Kirby wants this team doing.
So you're the opposite of a wood chopper, right?
I think that's probably safe to say. I am the opposite of a wood chopper in more ways than one.
Bizarro Brandon, the Dog Nation Downer Daily. Would that be the alter ego of one Brandon Adams?
That may be about right. That may be about par for the course. Now, speaking of being down, there is no being down right now about UGA recruiting. I love your piece the other day, your Sintel Intel. We get a chance to catch up with Aziz Ojulari, a really exciting prospect for this 2018 class for Georgia. And I always like it when these guys talk about other guys they want to see join them in the class. And, you know, Aziz mentioned a couple of those offensive linemen, Trey Hill, Jamari Sawyer. We've obviously talked, you know, over and over again about them when you've joined me here on Dog Nation Daily. But couldn't help but think when Aziz mentioned those guys, that great image that emerged on Saturday from Georgia of Hill and Sawyer standing there with the Tennessee commit Cade Mays. And for a Georgia program that put such an emphasis on recruiting offensive linemen for 2017, that's not changing for 2018 when you see those guys standing together on the Athens campus, the big shadow, all those guys kind of cast when they're all standing side by side. And it's really, Jeff, no wonder a guy like Ojulari would love to see those guys kind of doing battle with him at practice every day. That would be quite a group of offensive linemen to add to this Georgia class.
Man, it would be mortal combat, man-to-man, trench warfare, no doubt about that. The thing there is, you know, obviously Aziz had a recruiting spike with these are the guys that I think will finish the class. And I know that stuff that, you know, in my business, you know, you can sit there and you can draw eyes with some real content there. But I'll be honest, that was kind of like, you know, the entree. But the side dishes there of Aziz is really the story I wanted to tell. Not just his brother BJ for Brandon looking ahead, Adams, who would want to check off Aziz and then say, I want BJ Olari as well on the side of that, too. Is there anybody else in Marietta that we could add to the plate, you know, kind of like the Thanksgiving spread? But
pretty good Aziz, little 2020 quarterback, if you want to start thinking that way.
Oh, Brandon, already on quarterbacks again, man. Come on. But you're not chopping wood there, Brandon. You're just putting it through a processed sawmill, man.
You're
not getting any better.
That's exactly right.
But with Aziz, he is a young man of clear substance. I love the fact that it allowed me to tell the story, you know, U.S. Army All-American and all that, but never thought he'd be there 2 years ago, just put his head down and work. But the main thing for Aziz I wanted Dog Nation to read was so many times you hear and see recruits that get it made, they're made guys, they get the offer, they commit, and then maybe they go from overdrive down to fifth gear or fourth gear with their level of play. Not Aziz. He's wanted to earn it. He especially had to take on even more water for his team when Harrison Bailey went down with a clavicle injury that sidelined him for half of the 2017 season. So Azeez has done a manner of things. He's played some right tackle. He's played with a pulled groin. He has continued to try to set every record for Marietta High football in the weight room, dying to be a member of the Wolfpack. And when he heard the name Adam Anderson come to the fold, come to the clan, he wasn't a kid that was like, okay, where are my reps? Where are my pass rushes going to go? He's just like, man, Georgia's Wolfpack is going to be nasty again and continue to get nasty. And, I mean, that's the type of guy that's going to embody everything in the Kirby Smart culture going forward.
I want to talk to you some more about Ojulari coming up in just a moment. Before that, though, you know, we showed, if you're watching a video, you saw the picture of May standing next to the two offensive linemen, the guys that he had talked about with you in your Centel Intel piece. And would you mind giving us a little postscript on the Cade Mays visit to Georgia on Saturday and kind of what that meant and kind of, you know, where he fits into the Georgia offensive line plans? Certainly seemed like he was having a good time there. And I know you got some attention from Tennessee fans for even, you know, sort of showing him on UGA's campus. That's obviously an anxiety-producing thought for a lot of Vols fans. I mean, what did you think overall of Mays being there at the South Carolina game?
Well, man, Brandon, I think this is might be a 30-for-30 special going down the road, at least for Tennessee fans. Cause to me, I think you know, you got to know the Cade Mays backstory. Cade Mays is a Vol family. His dad was a team captain and offensive lineman for the Vols in the mid '90s, and you know, prominent Knoxville family, businessman in Knoxville. He is a guy that, to me, it seems like the only reason that Cade Mays, and these are my thoughts here, the only reason that Cade Mays is now scheduled official visits and taken one to Notre Dame and Ohio State and unofficials to Clemson and Georgia and then officials to follow to Clemson and Georgia, the only reason this is happening is because it looks like to me a vote of no confidence for the Tennessee coaching staff as it currently stands. Whether this is a power play or a power broker, that's something for someone to read far too much into it. I think the core of this, you have a young man by the name of Cade Mays, five-star lineman, nation's number 16 prospect, I believe. He is a guy that I think eventually will make his own decision, will play where he wants to play. It's his life. It's his future. He does want to win. He does see a potential kinship. You can clearly see that. I don't need an interview to tell me that. With what's going on at Georgia, a guy like you know, Owen Condon, a guy like Warren Erickson, those guys looked like they already knew each other pretty well. And then there's also the potential there with Jamari Sawyer if he does join the class at Georgia as well. I think if Jamari joins the class, he becomes a very big part in terms of the package that could land Cade Mays or could potentially land Cade Mays. And this is a guy that, you know, I look at him on the film. I think he's maybe a right tackle, maybe not a classic left tackle. I just don't think there's a lot of great tackles in the class, elite first-round tackles in the class this year for 2018. I can see Cade Mays really, you know, starting out at a tackle, maybe coming in at a guard early on and kind of growing into maybe a tackle spot. But he is a lineman. He is a big guy. He is a mauler. He is the type of guy that will help Georgia. I mean, Brandon, it's kind of asinine or just kind of greedy, straight bizarro Brandon greedy to think this way. But, like, man, if Georgia – you could look at Georgia's depth chart one day, 2019 and 2020, and the fans will have to go – I don't know if there are more NFL draft picks on the line or in the backfield or first-rounders on the line or on the backfield. And, yeah, there's that quarterback in between all that, which is also going to be spackled with five-star gold as well. It is just a very interesting proposition if Georgia can put this type of line talent and let them clear the way for those backs and also that quarterback, either it's Jake Fromm, Justin Fields down the line, maybe even a Harrison Bailey down the line. That's just a great thought for Georgia fans to think about for 2017. It looks great. 2018, 2019, 2020. You know, this is a reality check, but you know, there's a great chemistry to this year's team. There's no doubt about that. But I do feel, and I've said this a lot over the last 2 weeks, that the least talented roster that Georgia should have over the next 3 or 4 years is currently the one right now.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of evidence to back that point up, and that's still a resounding statement to make. It's the kind of thing that's going to get some attention and turn some heads, but it's well-founded in terms of the evidence to support it. And I find it interesting when you talk about the potential, you know, positions that have the most depth. I don't believe you mention outside linebacker, but that's one of those spots that actually could reign supreme as the deepest position of all for Georgia. And I want to go back to Ojulari on that for a moment because Azeez kind of factors in that discussion somewhat, you know, with an Adam Anderson who we know is going to be a part of the 2018 class, with a KJ Henry who might be a part of the 2018 class. And I'm curious, how would you compare Azeez to these other guys who play the same position? If you want to reach the 2019 and start thinking about a Nolan Smith in this discussion, I guess you can. I mean, certainly from a physical standpoint, Azeez seems to look the part. Is he as much a finished product as some of the other guys that I just mentioned, though?
I think he is, because he's continuing to get better. He's continuing to improve himself. He's a guy, you know, you got to remember, you know, Bellamy, Carter, those guys will be matriculating on to the NFL. Of course, there's a guy like Robert Beal in the wings. There's a guy like, you know, Malik Herring, who's even getting some playing time as well in the wings. But, you know, Georgia needs that strong side defensive end, and they also need those in their odd front. They also need that jack, that outside linebacker who sometimes comes up and plays like a defensive end as well sometimes. I think Azeez can kind of play definitely the outside linebacker spot. He's a guy. You pair him with Adam Anderson. Adam Anderson if Adam Anderson was on the team right now, he might have as good of a pass rush repertoire as anybody that Georgia has right now. Now, Adam Anderson has to put on weight. And he's still got a little bit of ways to go to reach his true potential. But, you know, what Azeez Ojulari brings is just a really strong all-around. He's mentally tough. He's physically tough. He's strong. He loves to play, loves to get better, loves to get on the practice field and mix it up and see how good he can be. Azeez Ojulari is going to come in ready to play and with the right attitude to compete for a job to play.
Let me go back to Saturday for a moment. I believe Rick Sandage, Channing Tindall were on hand for that game. Those are two guys that, at least in some form or fashion, maybe Sandage more so than Tindall, but those are two guys that are considering South Carolina. Seeing Georgia win, see the atmosphere, the number one team in the country, does that do much to sway these guys away from the Gamecocks towards Georgia? I mean, can you get in their mind and sort of describe what it's like for them to kind of see a team that they're considering in another team's stadium and kind of how that sort of Pepsi challenge works?
I think what's happening is that they can clearly see the future at Georgia with the players. And I do know that when those players get on a visit, maybe they get a really good idea from the commits who's coming. And there's almost an example of saying, do you want to be on this team? Do you want to be a part of this team? Because we'd love to have you. Otherwise, we're going to be tough to deal with. And they don't even have to oversell that at all. I mean, the case with Tindall, I think Georgia's chances with Tindall are a little bit better than they are with Sandage, just because you have names like Robert Cooper and also Jordan Davis, the talented defensive tackle out of Mallard Creek, who supposedly is now down to just North Carolina, North Carolina State, and Georgia, and is expected to make a decision soon. You've got, you know, more clear options, I guess, at defensive tackle, whereas I think when Georgia looks at its last remaining linebacker pieces, it might be a gentleman by the name of Otis Reese, who was also there in Athens for another visit on Saturday. And then you also have Channing Tindall as the remaining linebacker pieces for 2018. And both of those guys are explosive. You know, Reese is kind of in the Alec Ogletree mode, I would say. I would put Tindall as a guy that's far more explosive. And he could kind of fit that role, I guess, a little bit that you see with Roquan Smith as well. I mean, Tindall has incredible first-step quickness, acceleration, leaping ability, strength. You know, Tindall is a guy that lives in Columbia, South Carolina. And maybe, Brandon, the most impressive postscript for the Georgia Dream recruiting class for 2018, maybe it should be called Dream 18 if all this comes to fruition. But if you look at Georgia, if they could potentially pull Cade Mays and Channing Tindall of this class, and I do think the probabilities are there right now, they could get even stronger. But you have to underscore that by thinking, South Carolina, maybe its top recruit out of Columbia, South Carolina. Tennessee, its clear top recruit out of Knoxville, Tennessee. To me, you just have to sit there in the cave of wonders and kind of think about, is that more impressive than the five-star quarterback and the nation's number one running back? Is that more impressive than the running back haul? I think it's just going to be a boatload of impressive when you start looking at
pulling guys like that late, not guys they've worked on forever. They have worked on Kendall forever, but pulling guys like that late into a class, which is in the home city of two SEC East rivals, the 2018 class is continuing to get better and better for the Bulldogs.
Well, let me follow up on that, because Chris Farrell in the comment section was saying a moment ago, hey, can we talk about the defensive tackles? When's Georgia going to bring in some defensive tackles? Jeff, I think you know this because you and I have talked about this off air enough. There was a time when I was right there with Chris sort of, sort of fanning the flames of hysteria about the fact that Georgia wasn't recruiting enough defensive tackles. Now I don't feel that way anymore. Georgia doesn't have the commits yet necessarily, but between Wyatt, who we know is coming, and you mentioned Cooper, who might come, and, you know, the other names are kind of out there, even if Trevor Trout's kind of, you know, fallen by the wayside now. Georgia is in the mix enough now with what I think of as very high-quality defensive tackles that I no longer have any concern about that position for Georgia this 2018 class. I think they're going to sign a couple really good ones to go along with Wyatt, and I think that group's going to be fine. That was a big point of worry for me at one point, but not anymore.
Yeah, the defensive tackle spot. I think with a lot of cases with the Georgia class, these questions are being asked, and maybe they're being asked a little too prematurely, because I think things will resolve themselves in the end, is A, who's left? B, who is Georgia targeting for who's left? And you look at it, the numbers look like they're about six or seven spots. I think Georgia will eventually sign 24 guys for 2018. And you wonder, and everybody just kind of prematurely goes to that, okay, which one of those commitments are going to get soft played and will have to decommit so we can create more room for these four and five stars? Please, everybody, I'm going to counsel everybody to do this. If you listen to one thing this week on this program from me, the ratings do not work the same for Georgia internally as they do on those ranking services. Now, those are a great kind of currency exchange rate or something like that, where those ratings usually spot on, identify good to great players. There's some really smart scouts and guys that do that for a living. But if you had the chance to see how Georgia views these guys, they might look at a guy like Rashad Walgoose a little bit differently. They might look at a guy like, you know, a Tremel Walthor differently. They might look at a guy like John Fitzpatrick differently. They might look at a guy like Javion Becton differently as well. So there's just a lot of names that everybody thinks, oh, if we just say, you know, thanks but no thanks to this guy here and this guy here, then we have room for this guy and that guy. Doesn't work that way, especially doesn't work that way for Georgia. Those rankings really did not influence the coaching staff decisions at all.
All right, let me fly through a few topics here real quick, and you're always generous with your time, Jeff. We appreciate that. Jennifer Wheat-Rucker in the comment section was asking about some other visitors from Saturday. There was some, I guess, thought that Tyson Campbell was going to be there. I don't know that Campbell was for sure there, but, you know, any update on just kind of anything else from Saturday? I know it was an intense atmosphere. I thought the crowd was great. I have to imagine it made a huge impact on recruits. Campbell, other names you want to mention here in terms of influence by what's happened with Georgia here the last few days?
Well, I guess the tease I can drop is there are two players in the 2019 class. That thing is like a butterball turkey, man. It's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. Two names in the 2019 class that you haven't read a lot about that had Georgia, and these are four-star recruits that had Georgia as their leader going in, and then the visit just continued to embellish why they love Georgia, why Georgia is standing out for them. I mean, if you guys are looking for a lot of doom and gloom regarding 2019 or even 2018 for the next couple of months, probably not going to happen. If there is, I'll try to do my best to make sure that those losses and, you know, maybe some of the bad gets recorded as well. But right now, it's really hard to maintain a fair and balanced and an objective view right here, because there's so much sunshine that's coming out right now for Georgia's recruiting efforts.
How about Zamir White? What do you have, 300 yards, five touchdowns on Friday night for Scotland County? I mean, where do you put White in terms of where he is near the end of his senior season to maybe where DeAndre Swift was at this point last year, or if you want to think back to the Chubbs, Michelles? I mean, kind of where does White rank as a prospect based on the huge statistical performances that he's putting up to some recent Georgia running backs who've come into this program?
It's crazy, Brandon, because he did that against his nemesis, his true rival. I mean, if Zamir White, if someone gave him a Richmond hater T-shirt, he would have worn it. that's how much he despised or they just want to beat Richmond. That's the game of the year. They circle it. They bowl face it. That is the game on the calendar every year. Like Zamir has always told me, if you want to come see me really, really play my best football, really get after it, come to that Richmond game. That is the one where I really cut loose. He had three touchdowns in the first quarter. He improved on his average yards per carry of 13.8 with, I think, 14.2 against Richmond. He had a 90-yard kickoff return. He crested the 7,000 career yard mark for his high school career. And what's really important about that is I think if Scotland County, to their credit, if they wanted to run Zamir White in the ground, he could probably have about 8,500 yards career rushing right now. But they don't want to do that. He barely gets more than 15 to 18 carries a game right now because they want to save him for his bright future. And I said this on our Before the Hedges show last night because I get this question a lot. I think Georgia has about three backs that could start or be in the two deep for anyone in the SEC next season. But I also feel that when Zamir White comes in, he will either be the 1A or the 1B back with DeAndre Swift, and he will be getting those 12 to 15 touches per game as a freshman running back in the SEC.
And let's make sure we tell folks this, and boy, that's quite an interesting way to end our conversation, but you mentioned the Before the Hedges show. Let's make sure we remind folks that as we head into the hot time of recruiting season, a lot of chances to catch you in addition to your two appearances weekly here on Dog Nation Daily. It is Before the Hedges every Monday with you and our buddy Hannah Chalker talking about UGA recruiting there. On Wednesday night, your own personal Facebook Live there presented by Kroger. And then this Thursday at the Marlowe's in Roswell for our Dog Nation big game preview of the upcoming matchup against the Auburn Tigers. But there's always a lot of recruiting kind of sort of mixed into that discussion as well. So, Jeff, we're looking forward to seeing you on Thursday in Marlowe's and then all your other Facebook Lives here throughout the week as well.
Yeah, I got to thank folks for watching that show already with Hannah. I mean, they're really just there to see Hannah, and I'm just the guy in the tie that tries not to sound boring and throw out too many metaphors. That's a great show. It's just a different way for people to kind of sample our recruiting coverage. We can show a lot of videos. We're going to have a lot more treats coming in that show to make it a little bit more viral and even a little bit more viewer-friendly for folks to want to really make Monday night something to watch as well. And you know, that Wednesday night show is kind of like Jeff Unplugged, where we don't have all the great production as the folks behind the glass do for us on Monday night. There's no Hannah Chalker or anything like that. There's just a guy with a creaky door that sometimes needs WD-40 and kids and dogs and everything else. And we always give away that $50 gift card from Kroger thanks to their great sponsorship efforts with us and Dog Nation. And that's something that, you know, I hear a lot of people tell me they enjoy those Wednesday nights. And I'm thankful that they have that time out of their lives to think about Georgia football and Georgia recruiting 50 weeks a year, something like that, and I'm very thankful for that.
I like the idea of calling it Jeff Sintel Unplugged. That's what it kind of is. You know, it's not the big studio production. It's sort of how it all began, you know, back in the early days of Dog Nation was just in a garage and a dream. That's kind of what the Wednesday night Facebook Live presented by Kroger is, Jeff. I can get behind that a little bit.
Kind of like the garage band effort, you know, Brandon, and hey, this is, you know, counter program and everything, but folks, the 30 for 30 on Ric Flair
tonight
comes out tonight. It's
tonight.
On ESPN. It's about 10 p.m.
That's right.
I know my good friend Rusty Manziel said he was going to tailgate for that because he's so excited for it. I know Brandon will be, wheeling, dealing, kiss stealing, limousine riding, jet flying.
No doubt.
Brandon Adams might even have his alligator shoes on. He
could very well.
Very hard to keep those things on the floor for Ric Flair's 30-30 tonight.
That is exactly right, Jeff. That's a great thing to remind folks of. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I go to bed before 10 p.m., so I won't see it tonight, but I'll see it this week. I'm excited about it. And, Jeff, we'll be excited about having you on Dog Nation Daily again this week. We'll talk to you then, all right?
All right, Brandon. DVR, brother. I know you know it.
Absolutely.
DVR that thing.
Absolutely.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, good stuff there from Jeff Sintel. And I am, y'all know, I'm like the biggest dork in the world when it comes to this wrestling stuff. And this 30 for 30 for Flair tonight, I'm really excited about. But not so excited to stay up past my bedtime for, if you get my drift. You know, I wake up pretty early. That means going to bed pretty early. So I won't see that tonight, but I will see it at a certain point. How about Jeff Sintel? You know, he had actually tweeted this thing out this morning. You know, Jeff always kind of tries to come across as if, you know, he's not the wrestling fan. He doesn't know as much about it as I do. But if y'all saw him this morning on a Tuesday as we record this, he was already tweeting about this Flair thing. So maybe we're rubbing off on Jeff here. Maybe he's becoming a little bit more of a wrestling fan as we go on. Something I will be watching, and actually I'll actually even be broadcasting tonight, 7 p.m. or just after 7 p.m. on the SEC Country Facebook page, the same Facebook page where we do AT&T SEC Country Live each and every day. We're going to do a very special Path to the Playoff show. Myself and Mike Johnson are going to team up, and we're going to talk about the college football playoff rankings essentially as they come out, just kind of looking at what's going on there with those playoff rankings. And obviously the number one story for that tonight will be the number one team in the country in Georgia, and do they remain there? I really don't think there's any kind of argument for removing Georgia from number one here this week. I do think the committee likes changes. I think that keeps people interested in the TV show. And if you think about this discussion as a TV show, everything the committee does will always make sense, because it's not about sort of objective college football analysis. It's not even about previewing who they eventually think the top four teams in the country are going to be. It's about producing a TV show from week to week. There have to be storylines. There have to be plot twists. There have to be all of that. So, you know, last week, Georgia being number one, even though Alabama was number one in the AP in the coaches poll, that sort of fit the idea of a TV show. Tonight, having someone challenge Georgia at the spot at number one, moving closer to Georgia, that would obviously fit the parameters of what we expect from a TV show with its storylines. But in this case, I just don't think that argument's there. I mean, the number two team in the country, Alabama, essentially beat LSU in the same manner that Georgia beat South Carolina. No real justifiable reason to leapfrog Alabama over Georgia, even though LSU is a ranked team. I mean, LSU and South Carolina are essentially very similar teams. You can't do that. The number three team in the country is Notre Dame, a team that Georgia's already beaten. Then you get into Clemson, who struggled a little bit with NC State. NC State actually lost to South Carolina. You can't move one loss Clemson ahead of Georgia right now. And then Oklahoma, I guess the biggest national win of the weekend, certainly a thrilling game. What was it? You know, more than 100 combined points scored between the Sooners and the Cowboys, but I don't think that's the kind of win that would propel Oklahoma either. I think the top four, top five probably stay very much the same way that it was. You know, with Georgia, Alabama, Notre Dame, then you get to Clemson, Oklahoma. The real big mover up is probably going to be Miami, though. Miami does get a win against Virginia Tech, a win that a lot of folks thought they would not get. I mean, I think that Miami's a big mover here. Is there a chance that undefeated Miami can leapfrog the 2-1 loss teams, Oklahoma and Clemson? I guess there is some chance of that, but it may be more likely that that Miami moves up to six, setting up a matchup between number six Miami and number three Notre Dame in Miami this upcoming Saturday. So we'll be talking about that tonight on the SEC Country Facebook page. Let me also mention something about the Georgia-Auburn game. And by the way, I also think that Auburn's going to be a big mover tonight as well, from 14, probably solidly in the top 10 of the playoff committee's rankings here. But Jerry Hinnon, who writes for SECCountry.com, had a stat on Auburn that I found to be pretty shocking, I guess. And it, almost so much so that I didn't think it was true, but I'm assuming that it is, or otherwise Hinnon wouldn't have written it, that Auburn has not beaten a top 15 team since November 1st, 2014. It's been that long since Auburn collected a win against a team ranked in the top 15. Obviously, they'll have a chance to do that on Saturday against Georgia, but that only speaks to just how disappointing Auburn has been as of late, and just how much Auburn needs this game against Georgia on Saturday. And actually, let me correct myself. It's not even so much that Auburn needs this game, it's actually that Gus Malzahn personally needs the game. I think that Auburn is one of the most fascinating teams in the entire college football landscape, in that they are still very much alive for the richest prizes that this sport has to offer. And they are also still very much a program in the crosshairs here. Jay Jacobs, the athletic director, is gone now. He's stepping down. That sort of Friday news dump comes out that he's going to be leaving that job pretty soon. And maybe Gus Malzahn could be leaving as well if he doesn't get one of these big-time wins before the end of the season, with Georgia coming up on Saturday and Alabama coming up to end the regular season. It's been a long time since Auburn's tasted that, and the hunger to do that, both for Malzahn, the coach, and the fan base around him, I think it's going to make Jordan-Hare Stadium incredibly intense on Saturday, but I have no problem believing that Georgia's going to be ready for it. A couple other quick stories I want to get to here. Jimbo Fisher to Texas A&M. That's what Brett Zwerneman, the Texas A&M writer from, what is it, the Dallas Morning News or Austin American Statement, one of those papers out in Texas, he goes on the Feinbaum show yesterday and says, hey, wouldn't surprise him to see Jimbo Fisher get involved there. What makes sense about this is we think that Fisher has looked around before, ultimately decided to stay at Florida State last year, not accepting the overtures from LSU, but Florida State's changed a lot since then. This is a program in turmoil. Did not get Justin Fields. Really does not look like to be a very deep roster, and maybe a Seminoles fan base that's tasted national championships both with Fisher and Bobby Bowden before him. Maybe the Fisher act is wearing thin in Tallahassee. Maybe he does think about moving on, and Texas A&M would be just as good a place to land as any. They've got the money to pay him. They've got the resources there in Texas to recruit. That's actually, I don't know that it's going to happen, but it's one of those rumors that does kind of make sense. Final story for the SEC three I want to get to here. I thought this was really interesting from Florida fans. So on Saturday, Kirk Herbstreit goes on ESPN's College Game Day and says, hey, here are my two favorites to get the Florida job. One of them is Scott Frost, who you've heard us talk about before here on Dog Nation Daily. The other is a big name. It's Chip Kelly. But if you go to SECCountry.com, where they've written about Chip Kelly getting the Florida job potentially, we're going to talk about this on AT&T's SEC Country Live today. What's kind of interesting here is that you don't really see very many Florida fans seem all that excited about that possibility. They don't seem to like the idea of Kelly getting that job, which I think is kind of interesting. It's actually probably kind of smart. I don't know that Kelly is a great fit for Florida, but he's the biggest name available. And so from that standpoint, I'm sort of surprised that Florida fans aren't a little more interested. We'll talk about that more on AT&T's SEC Country Live. And for now, we'll make that your SEC through. All right. I want to get back to Georgia here for a moment here on Dog Nation Daily, or at least some Georgia names from the past. I mentioned a moment ago that I think there's a chance that Georgia may owe some of its all-time great players an apology. And the two players that I'm talking about are A.J. Green, the wide receiver, and Todd Gurley, the running back. Both of these guys were suspended for memorabilia-related offenses. In 2014, Todd Gurley was suspended 4 games because an autograph dealer emerged to say that he had paid Gurley for signing some autographs. You remember the situation with A.J. Green involving his jersey from a bowl game. And both these players, big-name players, sat out significant amounts of time for Georgia, and it really hurt Georgia on the field not have those two guys. Now, in 2014, Georgia still won all its games without Todd Gurley, right? Everything but the Florida game. But Georgia issues against Florida that day weren't Gurley related. It was more about stopping the Florida running game. But nonetheless, Georgia kind of took a real heavy-handed approach to Gurley and Green by putting them on the taking them off the field because of these memorabilia issues. And something about that never set right with me. Something about that, especially in the Gurley case in 2014, the most recent instance. I just thought that Georgia had an opportunity to fight that, an opportunity to force the accuser to prove his point and force the accuser to you know, go forward with the prosecution, if you will, against Todd Gurley, as opposed to just sort of laying down and taking that and taking Gurley off the field. And a reminder of just how frustrating this was for Georgia fans in 2014 comes from SI, who writes about a situation involving Alabama in 2009 and the allegations that some Alabama players, including Terrence Cody, who you remember as Big Mount Cody, the big defensive tackle from that Alabama team, that they got a little bit of money for signing autographs. And listen, my reaction to the Alabama story is pretty much the same as everybody else in college football. This is a half decade ago, or even almost a full decade ago now. Who cares? Who cares that players who put their life on the line for their university and got no official compensation, who cares they may have gotten a few hundred extra dollars? I certainly don't care. And it's not that I sort of endorse not following the rules. I just don't think this is a rule that's all that valuable, all that important for college football. And in the case of Georgia, I thought Georgia surrendering so quickly on Todd Gurley was kind of a mistake. There have been allegations against other big-time players. And you either had Johnny Manziel at Texas A&M serve a very short suspension, or Jameis Winston at Florida State, who had some similar allegations, serve no suspension at all because Florida State found no evidence to support what was being said. Should Georgia have fought more in 2014? Maybe it should have. And that's the point I think the Alabama story brings up here in the SI report. Now, there's nothing that can be done about the past. But with Kirby Smart leading the Georgia program now, if something like this ever happens in the future, I hope it doesn't. But if it does, I hope Georgia fights a lot more for its players next time than it did for Todd Gurley in 2014 and maybe even A.J. Green a few years before that. All right, we will wrap up the show here with our Gator Hater Countdown. Now, we're going to do this every day between now and the world's largest outdoor cocktail party next October. Georgia wins this year. We think they're going to win next year, regardless of who the Florida coach is. But it's still an important rivalry for Georgia fans. In 354 days from right now, the Dogs get back at it in Jacksonville in the rivalry that matters more than any other for UGA, and gets another win in this series and takes another step towards making this be a rivalry that Georgia fans are very proud of, the way it was back in the glory days of the 80s with Georgia, as Larry Munson said, dogs on top. And we think they're going to be on top in this series for many days to come. I'll also tell you this. As I mentioned earlier, if you would like to have one of the Own the East t-shirts that I am wearing right now, for those of you watching a video, the way for you to have a chance of winning one, retweet from me at Dog Nation Daily. Either my tweet from this morning with a link to the video show, or my tweet coming up with a link to the podcast. I'll pick somebody to be a winner tomorrow. We'll see you on Dog Nation Daily.